This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610, Reginald Latitude. Luke Morrow in for John Lopez on the day. Dropping bombs, man. It's been fun. It has been fun to just turn the hate machine on and let him go. But it's not like he's wrong. Like, if you could tell me he's wrong, let us know. 713-572-4610. You can't. It doesn't happen. Or maybe you feel like he's wrong in this regard, because we were actually just now we're ranking quarterbacks, but because it came out of the kind of thought of looking at a team like the Cincinnati Bengals and the ways in which they've kind of, they had a relatively meteoric rise when they were able to draft the likes of Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Burrow, but they've gotten to a place where they have not reached their ultimate goal. And it feels like they're in this nebulous place where you saw a little bit of a downturn. Is this going to be able to turn back up? But ultimately, for our purposes, do they exist as a kind of a potential cautionary tale for the Texans offensively here? And Luke, it seems like you maybe have some feelings to that way.
Yeah, it was just a thought I had. I'm not saying this for certain, but I was thinking about this just yesterday. Yeah, if the Bengals are that cautionary tale. Now, look, there's almost the highest of highs where they made the Super Bowl. They made an AFC title game the next year, should have won. But the Super Bowl ended on a sack. The AFC title game essentially ended on a sack. And then since then, they've been 500 these last two seasons, haven't made the playoffs, while Joe Burrow's been sacked an average of 47 times per season the last 4 years. He got injured 2 years ago. And when you look at the way the Bengals have been constructed, it goes back to that Ja'Marr Chase draft pick, where I can admit I was wrong, but I wanted them to go with Penei Sewell, and I think it's worked out for both teams.
It sure has.
Yeah. But I thought the position they were in, that was after that rookie season, Burrow got beat up and battered, and he said, you got to address the offensive line, and it felt like kind of a selfish move. No, let's get his college teammate and, you know, get him another weapon here, and I thought it was silly. It's worked out for both. However, moving forward beyond that, it feels like the Bengals still have ignored the offensive line too much and continue to pour in resources to the offensive weapons for Burrow. And while he's played really well and the offense has put up some gaudy numbers at times, and look, the Bengals defense is not nearly as good as the Texans.
That's the understatement
of
the day, just because they had some nice young talent and in the way that the Texans went and added on to that with some free agency and obviously continuing to draft, the Bengals actually went the other way and just added nothing to it. And are currently still in a level of a contract dispute with one of their better guys that still remains on the defensive line when it comes to Trey Hendrickson.
When they made it to the Super Bowl, that defense was very good. But the defense these last 2 years,
they had drafted really well at that point, interestingly enough.
And then, the checks kind of come due and everything, and you have to make some tough decisions, and you pay all your monies to your quarterback and your wide receivers, and you have to let guys go. But the point being that they've been 500 the last 2 years, haven't made the playoffs. Burrow's getting sacked, like I said, on average 47 times per year. He's dealing with injuries every season. And you wonder if the Bengals still have not done enough to address the offensive line and just continue to build the weapons around him. And then I look at the Texans, where this offseason in particular, I know they've brought in a lot of bodies for the offensive line.
Correct.
But I would say, and you can disagree, tell me if you disagree, I thought the biggest swing on offense this offseason, the biggest move, was Christian Kirk.
I mean, it's hard to deny that. That's been the one, at the very least, that you go, the one that you can as close to guarantee or most guarantee that will hit for you. And what's funny is, I think when it came to weapons, yes, you needed some weapons, and it was nice to have a guy that you feel comfortable will hit for you. That's generally the idea of going and acquiring in free agency. It felt like if I was going to pick, going in, you know, at the end, the season ends, right? You lose to Kansas City, and I'm like, all right, looking forward, what I need this roster to look at and where I'm going to apply. Like, if I knew that I had one token that would hit, I would absolutely have applied it to the offensive line, and they definitely went the other way.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I agree with the sentiment there, and I do think that could be a cautionary tale, and I would have loved for them, that would have to be instructive in the way that they've handled this, but they seem to very much believe in the ways that they've operated and the things that they've constantly said. The undertones of that all points to the idea that they do not believe that it was a talent issue on the offensive line. when it came to it. They believe this is a coaching issue.
Mm-hmm.
They believe this was a schematics issue because the two people who are not here from like they kept damn near everybody offensively and coaching wise outside of Bobby Slowick and your previous offensive line coach and Chris Strasser. Like, those are the guys who are gone, and obviously Laremy Tunsil, Shaq Mason go, and they've done a lot to tell us that the Laremy Tunsil move was more just circumstance and obviously, it seems like cap management. And if you were to take them at their word, which you don't have to, but if you were to take them at their word, that would all point to the idea that we think that all it takes is better coaching from the positional place and better offensive schematics. And I'm not certain that that's the way that I go with this, because I'm not in love with Zach Taylor, but I do think that he has a pretty solid situation there when it comes to the scheme and making sure that you have these things. But we've seen the ways in which Joe Burrow and pressure has hampered what they've tried to do.
For sure. So, yeah, I think the Kirk was the big one. And then, you know, in the draft, you trade out of the first round. Your first pick's a wide receiver. You go two wide receivers with just the one offensive lineman. For the record, I did like the draft, and I like what the Texans did. I do like the Christian Kirk move. I like that. As I've said on these airwaves before, I didn't really love how they did, you know, address the offensive line this offseason in terms of the people they have brought in to try to improve that offensive line. But, yeah, I was just thinking about it yesterday. And that concern of splitting the pie on offense where too much of it is rationed for the wide receiving core, specifically this offseason, I guess, and just not enough still being done on the offensive line. And C.J. Stroud is similar in the sense that that guy gets beat up and battered and pressured and knocked around and, you know, has to play beat up just like Joe Burrow. And you just worry about these guys a la like an Andrew Luck of just how much they can take over the course of a career. And I look at basketball, offense and basketball and building football the same, where I like to work inside out, right? With basketball, I always like to get a post touch and then you work it back out to the perimeter. Although I know the game's changed.
That's real 90s basketball.
Yeah, I know the game's changed.
I was like, I know exactly what era Luke wants to be in.
That's right. And for football, similar, where I think you have to start with the offensive line and defensive line, and then you build out that way and should prioritize offensive line before the skill positions.
What's interesting about that perspective, though, is I understand, like, I think the Bengals illustrate this philosophically in a good way, but when you start getting into the nitty-gritty of it, I think it kind of changes it, because the investment of those weapons, I don't think, tanked them when it came to the draft capital investment. I think the tank was when you started having to have the contractual investment. And I think that's one place where you look at the Texans, and they've actually been very good in that regard. You have Nico Collins on a phenomenal deal that you got done early, right? You have basically the other wide receivers that you're looking at on their rookie deals, and especially your two rookies that are coming in out of Iowa State. And then I guess maybe the guy that you look at and you go, maybe he costs a little bit more, is Christian Kirk, which I think that was necessary position to get to. I think so. Like, I don't know if I look at it that way when it's like, are they not investing on in the offensive line because of the weapons? But I do think that there probably should have just generally, in a general sense, been more of a focus on that, because we've seen, especially recently, the cautionary tales load up. Even a team as great as the Chiefs, and maybe this doesn't hold up because the Chiefs have found a way to win outside of that with their defense being a forward first situation. So maybe that's what's leading them that way. But we've seen the ways in which the Chiefs have faltered when an incredible talent in Patrick Mahomes just isn't given enough time to allow that talent to flourish while not having the weapons to get the ball to. So it does feel like it is a cautionary tale, but the one thing I would hope is that you are not in a place where I can compare you to the decision-making matrix of the Bengals.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of things where we look at the Bengals as just not a well-run organization, and I don't think that I would feel the same way about the Texans.
That's true. I'm with you there. Now, the Texans certainly are better operated. Nick Caserio does a much better job than the Bengals. I think, what was it, Duke Tobin? They don't even know who's running that team over there. And the Bengals, by the way, they've screwed up both with the contracts, but also the draft. I mean, they didn't draft a lineman this year. It's the third round. You know, you go back to 2023, they didn't draft a lineman at all, but took two wide receivers and a running back, so on and so forth. They just haven't committed the draft capital to offensive linemen either. But to your point, not only with the Mahomes situation, but then the other side of that coin, the flip side is, I mean, you look at what the Lions have been able to accomplish, and they have some good weapons too, even though they weren't maybe necessarily all the biggest names coming out.
Right.
But they do it just from a great offensive line. Jared Goff's untouched. They have a great run game. They play off of that. The Eagles have been successful. Jalen Hurts, I don't think, is a top five quarterback. They do have some weapons, but they have a great offensive line. They work off of that. You know, the Packers have always had a good offensive line helping Rodgers and now Jordan Love. So offensive line can clean up things, can disguise. It can be some of that makeup for the rest of the lack of weapons on offense, where vice versa, if you have the weapons but you can't give your quarterback enough time, the weapons can become meaningless, which at times is the case with the Bengals, where they got a lot of talent on that offense. Sometimes it's still not enough because you just can't protect Joe Burrow.
Yeah, and I mean, that is the continual concern for me, and the idea that you're just going to put five offensive linemen together, and yes, them melding together matters more, but I mean, one of the things we're also maybe not talking about enough is that you are still putting five dots together in that you don't have a lot of guys that have played together when you're looking at what's probably going to be on this offensive line, right? You don't have continuity of years past. And yes, and then you're also throwing in guys that I would not say is top end talent on the offensive line. Let me ask you this, because this text came in on the text line, 713-572-4610. You can always get involved with the program there. Do you think the Nick Caley hire is being underestimated by the media when it comes to the O-line improvement, which I would say that if you were inclined to believe that, I'd be in there in that group, or do you think the team is overestimating the change? I'm in that place where I would say just to the average, because we can't know, right? Like, that is an unknown. We won't know it until you actually see it in practice, what the results are, unfortunately, or even seeing some of the process, because that's, again, something I will bring up about the Nick Caley. The unknown is that we don't even know what the process looks like, what the actual ideas of the offense are supposed to be, even if they're not executing and hitting the notes that they want to. But, yeah, man, like, if you're talking about what is reasonable to expect, I don't know that, like, the outcomes that they're anticipating fit in that range of what is reasonable to expect. A first-time offense coordinator coming in and a Cole Popovich who was in the building but is, you know, now there, to then take five guys who have been starters, but maybe the last times we've seen them starters, or at least a majority of them be starters, they weren't all that great, and then get them all to get one band, one sound to a place where now we're playing beautiful music well enough to run the football well and then also have an explosive offense. I think that you're making a lot of assumptions on a lot of different levels and hoping that they all hit to get to that point. And it does feel like the team is overestimating what the outcomes will be with these circumstances.
That's the camp I would be in. I like that question. I think it's a good question. It's hard to say now because we just don't know. The team doesn't even know. They might have an idea, but until they actually go out there week one and throughout the season, you truly don't have an answer because we just have nothing to base it off. We haven't seen it. But right now, where I am, I certainly lean more in that direction, that I think the team is overestimating this change because it is a first-time guy in Nick Caley. Like, if you brought in, I don't know, an experience, I'm not even going to throw out a name, but just say, I'll just for the sake of argument, just say like a Gary Kubiak's coming in to run the offense, you know, somebody ridiculous. I know, that's what I'm saying.
Just saying,
right?
The name got some people excited, even though we all know that that's not what's going to happen.
Honestly, like, even with Bobby Slowick, like, he was a first-time play caller too. But you still had some type of idea, like, okay, he was under Shanahan, so he's going to bring some type of Shanahan thing. But with Caley, he was in New England most of the time. He went over to Sean McVay.
Yep.
But you still have no idea what type of offense he's bringing. So I think that's a little bit of the scary part to me. Like, we have no idea.
Yeah, it's just the fear of the unknown.
Yes. Yes, and there's a lot of unknowns, right? Yeah. And I recognize you putting it in those terms is fantastic, because the fear of unknown is one of those things that gets me in particular, but I think us as a society a lot. But I think that you probably want to operate in some knowns, especially in the mode of attempting to contend that you are, right? Where you are trying to contend, you want to have something a little bit closer to a known. And I do respect, to be fair, I do respect people that can operate in that place of ambiguity. Right. I don't need to have the absolute certainty because I believe I have the convictions in this move. It's just I recognize that I'm not there. I'm happy that D'Amico Ryans and Nick Caserio can operate in that space. But one thing I will say is they better hit. Like, it better hit. To that end, as we're talking about kind of the people that matter in making this work, because we're talking about Caley, we're talking about Popovich, who would you say is the most important person, part, player to this offensive line and their success this season? Because, I mean, that's ultimately what we're hinging on here in this conversation, is the cautionary tale with the Bengals is the cautionary tale with the Bengals is like it does not work on the offensive line, and that hurts what is, I mean, very obviously great players around them, including the quarterback, right? And if you want it to work, who is most important to getting that to that place?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know. I'm kind of torn. I'd like to say Cole Popovich because he's the coach that's overseeing it, but we've seen the Texans run through offensive line coach year after year after year, and it hasn't really made a difference. So I think at the end of the day, it's kind of more about the players. And circling back to that question real quick, I think that's the hope of the Texans is that at least the offensive coordinator and the offensive line coach will be on the same page. They can gel. And then hopefully that allows the five guys on the offensive line to gel. And that's something that they missed last year where the coaches were as cohesive as they expect this year. We'll see if that's the case. But if I had to pick one person or player, I think I would say Titus Howard because I think he is probably the best offensive lineman they have on paper. He can play multiple positions and is going to have to, you know, he's kind of the linchpin, I guess, that brings this all together, where they're going to play him. And then also, I guess, of the guys that they have, he should be the one that is the biggest leader of that group because some of the other players are coming in, you know, whether it's a draft pick or Cam Robinson, like they're just coming into the organization. Titus has been here. So I think he's the guy that should and probably needs to hold that offensive line together. And as much as I hope the coaching changes help and work, I think at the end of the day, it comes down to the actual players and making sure they get on the same page and they gel and they perform well. So I think I'd say Titus Howard.
Yeah. That, you know what that made me think of is I never remember, like, do offensive linemen do the thing that wide receivers and coaches do or quarterbacks do where they get out, like, hey, let's go throw some foot. Like, do they have these bonding moments? Because I do wonder, especially with all of these new faces, if they're, like, and we've heard a lot about how there's guys in the building already, you know, before, obviously, guys have kind of returned back for non-mandatory activities and stuff, that there was a lot of guys working out in the building, but are they going to be able to gel on that interpersonal level as well to maybe help along the performance on the field? I'm excited to see that. And a fair point from the 832, grass is always greener. Everyone wanted a new offensive or more offensive lineman. Nobody names them. I would not say that that's the case. We talked about various players that have a level of experience and had played recently at a high level that you would like. One of the immediate ones that came to mind was Kevin Zeitler, who went to your in-division rivals, to the Titans. I thought that was a guy who you probably wouldn't have to pay a ton, even if you were looking for a short-term acquisition, a guy who had played well recently with the Lions, because I think that is a distinction between the likes of like a Laken Tomlinson, who, yes, he was a starter, but he had not played well this last past year with the Seattle Seahawks. Yes, you could probably say Zeitler's older. Is he going to fade? I feel better about him playing well than I do about Laken Tomlinson. Like, that is the type of thing where, yeah, you could say there's no names being said. We talked about some of these types of names that would give you some confidence paired with the young talent that you would bring in. And I know that, you know, the board felt in such a way during the draft where maybe they weren't able to get into that first class of linemen like they wanted to, like they talked about. We've heard many things this week about Nick Caserio, you know, working diligently to try and move up and get into those spaces. That I can understand, but I think that in free agency, not being diligent enough to get some more of those confident yeses answers on the offensive line, the guys that you talk about in that same space of being impactful to success in the offensive line, those are the things that I think I would look at.
Yeah, I know. I'm with you. The Will Fries was the guy I really wanted from the Colts who went to the Vikings.
It's a good one. But that one felt like he was the bell of the ball when it came to free agency and with guards or offensive linemen.
But I guess that kind of goes back to the point that got us into this whole conversation as we now put a bow on it, is just that I wanted them to take the big swings on the offensive line. To really commit to the offensive line instead of kind of just throwing a lot of things at the wall, so to speak, where you're just bringing in 17 guys, that what they had, just bringing all these people and hoping like somewhere in here we'll find the right combination.
It seemed like they operate in like the offensive line last year was good and just, you know, they just had to cut bait with somebody because of money wise and say we could just put somebody else in that spot. And it's like, man, it wasn't even good last year with the best player on the line. So now you kind of getting some mid-type players.
Yeah.
We'll see what it comes down to at the very least, right? Like, ultimately, I'd be very happy being wrong with this and not getting to a place where we have to talk about that cautionary tale being correct about the Bengals. If that offensive line can congeal, and if Nick Caley has a schematic system that very much plays to the strengths of the players, all of them including the offensive line, then we'll all be good. But those all still feel like a lot of ifs to answer. All right. You're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Appreciate you hanging out with us on this Friday. A lot of fun things happening, including a thing that's always fun, our lunchtime confessions. We'll do that next. I got to admit, I got to confess, I need to learn how to let things go sometimes. I learned that yesterday when I literally lost sleep. Literally lost sleep.
Over what?
So, I don't even know how I got to this point of just listening to some music last night, which I typically don't try and do while, you know, sports are on. And I was watching various games and obviously getting ready for the show today. But I was listening to music, and in my streaming app, I saw this one song that was no longer streaming, but it was but it had been on streaming at one point. So like they took it off of streaming, and I was like, well, let me go see, because sometimes they'll take it off of streaming and then they'll put it back up. So I was like, all right, let me go see if maybe I need to go re-find it. And it was a song by the rapper M.E.D., who is, you know, from L.A. or whatever. And it was a song called Therapy. And so M.E.D., Med, Therapy. You might imagine, not very easy to just Google, right?
Yeah.
But as I kept looking, trying to find details for this, it was impossible. I mean, I started in down the rabbit hole of I was on looking through discographies. I was learning about imprints and record labels and stuff to try and find where this might have been released on. I spent literally on what, I mean, actually, let me play a guessing game here, fellas. Help me out here. In looking up information on one song, just one song. It wasn't other songs I was looking up. How much time do you think I spent? And when I say that, you can hear it as wasted. How much time do you think I spent looking up information on this one song to ultimately find the info I was looking for?
I'm going to say 45 minutes.
45 minutes?
That's what I was going to say. I'll go an hour.
An hour? Somehow, both of you were wrong and right. Because it wasn't 45 minutes, nor was it an hour. But if you put those together, you're correct.
Oh,
I spent
almost
2 hours digging on this song. And as you might imagine, that took me away from thinking about other things. I was up till 2 in the morning. I was up into the...
You are a sicko, man.
That's what I'm saying.
What's wrong with you?
I don't know. I want to be better. But I was looking at the time. And as the time kept going, I was like, man, am I really going... I need to go to sleep. But I want to find... And I was like, I need to let this go. I'm obsessive. I think I might need help.
I can relate. I do that all the time. I look up and like, oh, shoot. I just wasted a whole hour Googling this or looking this up, trying to find this answer. Yeah, I always stay up later than I should. I always say I'm a completist. And
yes.
It is like a condition. It drives some of the people in my life crazy. If you say I'm looking for something, I can't stop till I help you like find that thing around the house.
Yeah,
you'll give up and I'll keep looking. Like,
no longer are you looking for it. We are looking for it now, right? And so
I have to complete the task.
If you're wondering, like, why does Reggie go looking up these stats? That right there.
Yeah.
Like, that is because I'm like, huh, I'm curious about that. And now I'm on the hunt for what is the stat that speaks to this? Where is that stat? Do I understand that stat? Well, let me go read up on that. If you want a little insight into the crazy that I have, that was it right now. Spent yesterday, an hour and 45 minutes.
Dang.
Just looking up details on a song.
I'm kind of like that when it comes to names, when it's like, oh, this running back played for this team. What's his name? Like, it will drive me nuts to the point I would sit here, like, the next day I'd be like, oh, Adrian Peterson, that's what I was talking about. I'd come out of nowhere like that, but that will drive me nuts.
It did. It did drive me nuts. Thank you for your sympathy.
I got a lot to choose from. I guess I would say my confession is I need advice. I need help here.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well,
coming to you guys.
Remember, to the right place.
Completionist, I'm with you.
That's right. I need help. Quick story. Brought my car in to get the tires realigned. They tell me afterwards, hey, you got this problem with the car. The arms need to be replaced under the car.
Oh.
The boot is leaking.
Oh.
It's going to be almost $1,400 to fix this.
Man.
Well, I mean, I know somebody who might pay you $1,400 for a job. You know, you might have to, it might require a little bit of gasoline, but it's fine.
Oh, shout out to Lynn.
Some quick money.
Lynn from Turkey Leg Hut.
I was hoping that you'd pick up the throwback to
yesterday. I'm like, $1,400? I'm like, oh, yeah.
Anyway, sorry. If you weren't listening yesterday, the former co-owner of Turkey Leg Hut, apparently we find out, not yesterday, but recently, that... He had spent paid dudes $1,400 a piece
to go gasoline
burn down a bar.
Wow,
yeah,
like straight out of Goodfellas.
I
love it. So they tell me it's gonna be about $1,400. I say, well, I'm definitely getting a second opinion. So I go to a second place yesterday, independent shop. I don't tell them what's up because they're gonna say like, oh yeah, that's true. You do have to fix that. So I say, hey, can you look at my suspension, see if there's anything wrong there? They have the car for the day. They get back to me. They said, no, we don't see anything. Everything's fine. And then I told them what's up. I said, well, somebody else told me the arms need to be replaced. The boot is leaking. I got to do all this. And they said, no, we didn't see any of that. It's fine. You're good to go. And so I took my car and I went on my merry way. Complete opposite. So now here's my dilemma.
Okay.
Who do I believe? Do I accept yesterday's report? Do I get a third opinion to see which side they're on?
You got
it. Am I good to go? And I just drive around thinking my car's fine.
If it was up to me personally, I'm good to go.
Yeah.
Because I'm guessing the first place you went to was probably a more pricier type of place, like a high end
like
place.
Mainstream, chain place throughout the country.
Yeah. See, I don't. Salute to everybody that worked there and all that stuff, but I don't be trusting them at times.
Oh,
man,
okay. See, we got the car people coming in too.
Salute to the car people,
man. Some from the 832 said, control arms, that's not a bad price. Did you a solid two would have needed another alignment before long.
That's what they told me. You're going to have to keep getting your wheels aligned. Now, I get free alignments because of some deal. So that's not a problem, but I don't know.
Because I was about to be with you, Figgy, and saying, nah, you good, because it seems like somebody was scamming you. And maybe that first place maybe didn't need your business no more.
Yeah, but sometimes the first place, which is the high end place, sometimes they look at certain things and be like, oh, let's just get all new parts.
Yeah.
And if you go to an independent place, they might be like, nah, it's still good to go.
That's
like
true.
You can still roll on it a little more. That's kind of like when you go get an oil change and they always try to change your air filter. And then you go to a backyard mechanic or something like that. They're like, you could get away with it one more time.
Right.
And then change it.
Or you could just go get the air filter yourself and put it in.
Exactly.
It's pretty, like, and I say this understanding that not everybody is, like, savvy. It is easy to put your air filter in by your lonesome.
Yeah.
This is my other confession, then, which ties into this. I wish I was good with cars. Just like, you know, Reggie likes his colorful, fruity drinks and doesn't care if people think.
You're damn right I do.
But that's not manly. I admit I'm not man enough to know all about my car, and I wish I did.
Yeah.
Oh, you want to.
I wish so I could handle these situations, but so I know what I'm talking about. I don't know. I don't know if they're trying to screw me or if the other place just doesn't know what they're talking about. I've been thinking, I guess I'll just go get a third opinion, but then you're throwing more money at potentially no problem because, you know, they charge you just to look at the car. I don't know. I've been torn up.
The best is at least have knowledge of the car where you get, like, if something is wrong, you could get up under there and look and be like, oh, you know what? This is exactly what I need. Let me take it to this place and tell you exactly what I need, and y'all fix the car.
Right.
Not necessarily me fixing the car, but hey, I need some new rotors. Mm. I looked under there already, and I need this. I need a water pump. So I need, you know, if I could have that type of knowledge, I'd be good.
Yeah, I'm just a sucker. I don't know. Johnson rod. Okay, got to replace. I have no idea.
Johnson rod's hilarious.
Johnson rod.
Keep helping us out. Help my boy out
on
the text line, 713-572-4610. They said if it's all about perspective. If you're not a car person you might decide to get the arm change, if you can live with it, it's not a death blow. Keep it. Okay. There's a lot of we'll run through these in the break. So please send them in, 713-572-4610, and we will hopefully it will help our guy Luke out so that he is not broken down but also not broke.
Yeah. Seriously.
I got to confess, man, I don't know how I feel about pre-ordering video games in this day and age now.
Mm.
So I just got a notification probably like 15 minutes ago saying, hey, this game is available, .. for pre-sale. So I'm like, okay. And then it said it officially drops in October.
Hey, yo.
So I'm like, why y'all doing this, man? Like, why the hell would you show me something if I couldn't have it?
That's
then?
Right.
The quote, the great Kevin Garnett. And was it Righteous? What's his name?
Uncut Gems.
Uncut Gems, yeah. But I got to confess, man, I don't know about, I never understood pre-ordering like digital games like that. Because I know some of them do have its perks where it might be cheaper if you pre-order it or you could get early access to it, like a week access. Like, I'm not talking about those. I'm talking about the ones that just say, hey, pre-order it right now. And, like, tell me, what's the purpose of it, man? Because I could just, it'd be one thing if it's going to sell out. Because, you know, back in the day, you could pre-order something because it might sell out fast.
Right. No, exactly.
But it's always going to be there. So I could just buy it the day it dropped. So I don't know. I always thought that was a little bit silly.
No, it is. It absolutely is a little bit silly. But I think the thing that gets you now is if either it's a game with microtransactions and they're like, we'll give you some of this currency, or they'll be like, we hear some add-ons that you get for pre-ordering that you don't get otherwise.
Yeah, because even with like the game Madden, like I kind of understand it a little bit because they do give you access like maybe 3 days before if you buy a certain one. But at this point, I'm like, man, I could just wait till they drop.
Also, you're an adult. How much more are you going to play in those 3 days that you get it before?
Yeah. So I'm just like,
you got a whole job.
No, I can wait until the game drop. And then also my beef with this is, why y'all saying pre-order and it's in October? We in freaking May. Like, I'm not about to pay, it's probably like 70, 80 bucks. I'm not about to pay that right now. I could just wait till October to get it.
I'm with you. Put that on the list of things from earlier, the question of the day. Pre-ordering. I don't get it. I'll just order it when it comes out.
Do you put in reservations?
Yeah, if I have to get a spot, yeah.
Okay, like, no, reservations? I was just wondering, because I was like, how far do you go? Because I know some people are like, I'm not reserving. If I get there and it's not available, I'll just go somewhere else.
Yeah, I'm kind of 50-50. I usually only get reservations if it's a big night, like for like New Year's Eve, like a night like that. If I'm just going out on a Saturday night, yeah, absolutely. I'll take my chance. There's plenty of restaurants around here. You don't have availability, I'll go next door.
Yeah, I do use the Pluggers app. Like, if I'm going to Pluggers ahead of time, like, yeah, you can stand in line on the app.
And you will stand in line.
Yes. That's why I'm like, when it comes to Pluggers, I would get right on that app and be like, hey, I'm here for two. And then about 5 minutes later, you come in and your seat is good to go.
I like how Confessions has just become a place where we like give people game, because it's folks giving loot game right now. Yeah. Like from the, let me see, what did I just, 281, you might need a new flux capacitor. I'm sure that's accurate.
Yeah.
And everything.
I believe it.
Or I've learned that the Pluckers app will help me out if I'm trying to get some Holy Mac. I like what you're doing there. All right. Those are our lunchtime confessions here on a Friday in Loop on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's talk about the Astros once more, because we haven't had an opportunity to talk a ton about them before as they head into the White Sox series in Chicago. But they've figured out, I mean, they've had a month. Let's kind of check in on them. And especially when it comes to Yordan. Like, Yordan has had a very weird month, maybe one of the worst months of his career. Is it time for a change for him? Is it time for this specific change for him? Let's talk about it next. No, big voice man, it's not John Lopez. It is Luke Morrow, the hate machine himself, hanging out for the OG John Lopez on this Friday. It's still in the loop. Reginald Atula with you as well as Figgy Fig, helping you get through this Friday and get towards all of the fun sports that's happening. Obviously, we got the fighting that's happening, from Ring Magazine out there at Times Square. We got Astros baseball going on this weekend, starting this evening with Framber Valdez on the mound in Chicago. We'll talk about that here in a second. We got Rockets game 6 happening in San Francisco as they try to stave off elimination further and push a decisive game 7. What else am I missing? Is there other stuff? Oh, if you want to go and see the Space Cowboys, they got the Spencer Arrighetti bobblehead coming up. Like, there's all sorts of stuff going on this weekend. Did I forget something? He was looking at me like, I don't know.
I was half listening. Okay, admittedly. No, did you say Kentucky Derby?
I guess the Kentucky Derby is also happening.
Kentucky Derby, let's go.
The one thing that
did
Luke
you bet on
hate.
It yet?
Did Ooh, you bet? Yeah, did
no,
you bet on
not
it?
Till I always wait till
the day. But yeah, do you have bets?
I will.
Ooh,
okay. I don't know.
Can we steal? I'm trying to think. Can we steal the best bets?
What's some good names?
Oh, there's great names. Actually, I'll give you some of the names that are coming to the Kentucky Derby, and we'll rank them.
Yeah, if there was ever a year to pay attention, I think journalism is the favorite.
It is, yes. There is so a horse named
journalism.
You should
be into it. Come
and
on.
It's capital J journalism at that, that's so right. Which is good. But we did mention, let's talk about this baseball team with the Astros. I mean, there's been things that have been trending up. There's 16 wins. I think they have as many wins as a few other teams in the AL West. Not a lot of space in the AL West between all of the competitors there. It's a pretty tight division. And thankfully, the Astros... pretty close to the top of that. I think they're 2 games back. Nothing that a week of good baseball and bad baseball from your opponents couldn't change, although the Mariners actually seem to be hitting. Someone who's not hitting nearly to the degree that you want him to, the man who is batting .219 thus far in the season, his name is Yordan Alvarez. Like, that is
just, don't even seem real.
It does not seem real. I know that sometimes he can start a little slow. It can happen or have at least some down points. I know that's the marathon, not sprint nature of baseball, but this has been an abysmal month for a dude, considering who is typically one of the most feared hitters in baseball. And no 8-3-2. We're not going to get that aggressive. They sent in, trade Yordan. Please stop. Stop that right now. Like, cease and desist in that moment. But is there something that you see, Luke, that could maybe be done to possibly help him get back to his ways?
Yeah. And I don't know if I would do this, but I do think it's an interesting conversation to have or something to think about, and that is just simply moving him back to the outfield. He's on pace to DH more this season than any other season in his career. I believe he's only played the outfield, I think it's 6 times so far this year.
Has it been that many?
I think.
Because I wouldn't have even guessed that off the top of my head.
I was going to say like 3.
Maybe it is only about 4. Somewhere in that
area. I'll look it up here just to make sure. But yeah,
somewhere to 4 to 6 through the first month. And if you go back and you look at the splits, he's always been a much better hitter. It is 6?
It is 6 times.
So, yeah, 6 times out of the first. Regardless, he's still on pace to play a season-low amount of games in the field and DH a career high this season. And if you go back and you look at the splits, he's been a much better hitter when he plays the field than when he DHs throughout his career. This year, the numbers aren't too different because small sample size, but also he's just struggling in general. But I wonder if, to get him out of that funk, you put him back in the outfield at least for a short period of time. And I would also look at somebody else in the AL at Rafael Devers, who has made that switch. And you might know that story because the whole Bregman connection and Devers wasn't happy and yada, yada, yada.
That's right.
But he's DH'd every game this year. He's not played the field once, and that's the plan all season. And he's hitting about .215. Now, his power numbers have come up. He's hit like 3 homers this week, but still, he's gotten off to, he was 0-21 to start the year. And I think, A, it's an adjustment. These guys are so used to playing the field their entire lives, growing up, minor league, everything. But then also, B, when you are struggling, I think it can really snowball because when you're DHing, all you have is those at-bats.
Correct.
So not only does it put more pressure on you, but then what do you do in between innings? Instead of focusing on playing left field, you're just sitting in the dugout stewing like, man, how did I miss that pitch? Why did I chase that?
Yeah, maybe you're looking at a pad and going and looking through pictures or some video, if that's allowed, I can't remember. And then, or you might even go into the cages, right, for a little bit and get some swings in. But what's interesting is I had not considered this because typically I think of, I do know about the ways in which DHing can, in a way, actually make a hitter less good for a period of time. But it's I usually think about that with young players, because young players, that they have not had that particular change of having to find a way to keep yourself locked into the game as you have nothing to actually do for maybe 2 or possibly 3 innings. But, you know, after getting used to getting up and having something defensively that you're focused on at any given time. But Yordan is not that. He is neither a young player nor a player that is unfamiliar with DHing and the rhythms of it.
It's true.
And that's the thing that kind of is weird about it for me is he should be of maybe any player that you make an everyday DH of the potential Astros that you could do that. He would seem like the guy that is most well situated to be able to handle that. It just feels like a really bad stretch. So I hear you, and I know that you're not saying put him back in the outfield, because the whole idea was trying to get him to be a DH consistently to try and protect him and shield him from potential injuries. So even if you would do this, it would have to be for a short period of time, which I think is what you're putting up there. I'm wondering if it is so grim to the point where that jump start is absolutely necessary. And I'm leaning to yes. And the reason why that is I'm seeing the weirdest stuff from Yordan. Yordan Alvarez is a dude who punishes pitchers for making the wrong pitch. And me and Lopez have talked about this here and there. I have been fascinated by the number of times I have seen a bat stay on Yordan's shoulder with a pitch that is meaty through the middle of the zone. It has been so weird to me to see that instance. And I don't know like what it is. I'm not well-versed enough to tell you the methodology of how a manager should get a guy into the space of feeling more confident in those spaces. But it feels like it's got to be something that has some level of teeth to it, something that has that might be a little drastic. And putting him back in the field and having that everyday feel, I do wonder if that maybe does jolt him into that rhythm.
He has, and part of it might be because he's not playing the field very much, but he has the lowest WAR on the team, which is crazy to think. Right now he's played as the least valuable player on this roster.
That is unbelievable. Like, I mean, Jake Myers, talking Chaz McCormick. Like, is it literally that far when we're talking about WAR, which is a cumulative stat. But like literally everyone.
Yeah, McCormick is half a win
oh
higher.
So, I don't know if I've seen Chaz play in all that long. Like, talk less of accumulate WAR.
Yeah. So it's not great right now. Now, look, I don't know. It's just a theory. I don't know if maybe it's just a coincidence, but it was just a thought I had of we know he always hits better when he's playing the field. He's playing the field less than ever, and he's also having a really, you know, maybe the worst start he's ever had. Correlation, causation, coincidence, whatever it might be. And I also think back in the first month, and I wonder if that is the biggest change or the boldest move the Astros have made, more so than even moving Altuve to the outfield.
Ooh, that is quite a take. That is quite a take here.
If, then this might be a big if, but if the slump is correlated to DHing more frequently.
And that's the tough thing is I don't know that we're ever, like, even once he comes out of it, I don't know that there's going to be anything that can serve as proof positive to the idea that that was the cause of this slump. So, yeah, that's going to be the tough part of that. The question I will ask here, Luke, is does the offense seemingly coming around to a point where it's still not incredible, but where it's passable, where you're finding off, you know, some offensive runs, where you've moved some things around to get Jeremy Pena's bat as it's been a little bit better than what we've seen in the last few years from him into every, you know, getting more and more at-bats at the top of the lineup. Do you think that the offense has progressed to a place where you have enough buffer to feel comfortable about letting him work through it? Because that's another part of this, right? If we were 3-4 weeks ago still, or like 3 weeks ago still, where we were looking at him, we're like, it's so dire and nobody's there where we need to have somebody do something and Yordan is the most likely, I would feel even more emboldened to possibly try this wild strategy that we're throwing out here. As you're finding more offense, it feels like you're having more cushion to let him find himself in a space where you're not exposing him to more of that potential of injury back in the outfield.
Yeah, I agree. So that's why you got to hope the offense continues. This has been a good week for the bats in terms of just scoring runs. And now you get the White Sox, who they do have a pretty good pitching staff, but they're just such a bad team that you should hopefully have a pretty good weekend in Chicago. So that buys you another 3 days. And look, maybe that's what you need. Maybe that's exactly what the doctor ordered just to get Yordan going, like a three-point shooter that needs to see the ball go through the net. You know, maybe he has a nice weekend against the worst team in the AL, and that catapults Yordan. But you at least buy a few more days with the White Sox, and then if guys start hitting around him or continue to hit around him, then it takes off some of that pressure. But, of course, he's the biggest bat in the lineup. He's the most important hitter in the lineup. If he's hitting, that goes such a further way. That makes this lineup so much better. And, again, to go back to the Devers comparison, like Devers has been struggling, but you know what? Alex Bregman, sorry to bring it up, he leads the AL in extra base hits, and he's batting, you know, 400 the last 2 weeks, and he's off to a great start. So that helps take the load off. But if those guys start to go cold, right, you got to rely on your biggest hitter, which is Yordan, and he just hasn't been there yet. And I will also say that the benchmark I usually set is a month. Give everybody a month into the baseball season. I don't even need to look at stats. You know, you got to get into your midseason form. But once we get to May, once you get a month into the season, it's like, okay, now you got to kind of put up or shut. Now we have to kind of see some of that production. Otherwise, we got to start having some real conversations. And here we are now at that month. So if this slump continues for, say, another 2 to 3 weeks, we really have to have some talks like, okay, what is going on here? This is more than just a slow start.
Yeah. So, I mean, what I really hope is that this weekend goes a long way and we see him, you know, put park a few in the outfield, right? Like beyond the wall, rather. And we could put any of this wild conversation of changing up what Yordan is doing to rest. And we just have him back as the most dangerous batter in all of baseball. And then everything's all good. But we'll see what it looks like as they start a 3-game set over the weekend at Wrigley Field in Chicago versus the White Sox. 6:40 p.m. today is first pitch in Chicago. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Wanted to remind you that we're proud to partner with the Insperity Invitational that is happening at the Woodlands Country Club Tournament Course this weekend. You got Stephen Alker, David Duval, Ernie Els, John Daly, and more of the PGA Tour champions' best. They're all on the course right here in town for an incredible weekend of championship golf. Has teed off today. Entry to the tournament is free, and you can get score updates, tee times, weather notes, and more information at InsperityInvitational.com. All right, coming up next, let's return to the Rockets, who, again, they're trying to stave off elimination in Game 6 tonight. And I don't know, maybe this sounds a little bit like loser talk or what have you. I'm still very hopeful that they win. But if we don't get to Monday and with continuing basketball, is the season already a success for the Rockets? 713-572-4610. Let's discuss that next.